I'm Liza.
I'm Riss.
And this is the Little Sleep
Much Reading Podcast.
And finally, from so little sleeping and so much reading, his brain dried up and he went completely out of his mind.
Happy World Giraffe Day.
I love giraffes. They are my favorite.
Are they your favorite animal fully, just full stop favorite animal?
Yep.
I feel like I knew that about you. Because do you have a pillow pet that's a giraffe?
Pilly.
Pilly, the giraffe
His name is
pillow pet.
Pilly.
And that everybody's so creative. How old were you when you got Pilly?
I was 12.
Oh, advanced age.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, my favorite stuffed animal is named Mr. Monkey. Also very creative name. But I did get him when I was like six.
Well, I have like a couple stuffed animals that I got when I was younger that are like my favorite ones, but like Pilly's my pillow on my bed. Like,
Pilly
I sleep with
served.
him every night.
Pilly is.
Pilly has been to France. He's been to Spain. He's been to Berlin. He's been to Aruba. Like, he's a traveling guy.
Pilly is a world traveler.
I think because he is a pillow, I can bring him everywhere and people, it's only like a little bit weird.
Sure.
But like my other favorite animal, I have one. It's like a pink teddy bear
Cute.
that my sister got for me when I was born. And if you shake it, like rattles. His name is Sprinkles. He's my favorite. I also have a little purple teddy bear that my Aunt Chrissy gave me named Stitches.
Stitches.
And I have a creepy bunny with a baby face.
Ew.
That's Bunny. I don't
That's
remember who
just
got that
funny.
for me. I got that the day I was born. I have a little dog. Its name is Love, and my grandma got that for me for my birthday the year before she died when I was
Rest in
six.
peace. What was I gonna say? I just love when kids name their stuffed animal something stupid. It's so real. Like, I was really not creative at all.
No.
Like, I had Yellow Bunny, Mr. Monkey. Like, and that's just like the way it has to be sometimes.
My cousins used to have a little panda, and it was their favorite, and his name was Poop Panda.
Poop?
Poop Panda.
That's
It's
honestly a
pretty
little
good.
bit iconic as well. I was trying to remember an anecdote just now about this Chinese panda at the zoo in China, and I can't remember what it was, but it had a really cute little name, and it was like the other pandas were like bullying it.
Oh.
And I was like, but now I don't actually remember the details of the story, so it's not important.
Poop Panda.
Poop
Must have
panda.
been him.
Must have been him. What are we doing this week?
This week is Summerween.
Summerween. Is that coined from, is that from Bob's Burgers?
Oh, I have no idea.
But you know the audio I'm talking about?
No.
It's like, it's on TikTok and everybody's been using it, and it's like, Summerween. The people of this town love summer so much that they celebrate it twice a year. I think it's from Bob's Burgers. It might not be, though. Let me find it. Summerween. Bob's. Yes, it is Bob's Burgers. Okay, anyway. That's it. Nothing else. What did you read?
I read Cabin at the End of the World, also known as Knock at the Cabin Door by Paul Tremblay.
And I read The Troop by Nick Cutter.
Nick Cutter.
Nick Cutter. It's a boy week.
It is a boy week. That's
weird. Is Paul LGBTQ?
I don't think so. Pretty
Neither.
Sure he's got kids and a wife.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey. You know who I always think is... I always think Nick Cutter or Paul Tremblay could be gay, but I'm instead thinking about the guy that wrote Hellraiser.
Clive Barker?
He is gay.
Clive Barker is gay.
None of the other guys are gay.
I'm going to double check on Paul Tremblay, but I'm pretty sure he has a wife and kids.
Not even Grady Hendrix is gay.
Not even Grady Hendrix is gay. Which
shocks me every time.
Also shocks me.
And Riley Sager is a man or a woman?
A man.
What the shit?
He's tricking us.
Someone's playing club music. It's only 4:30 p.m.
Get it, get it, get it. Do you live in like, this is so weird, but is it like a standalone house or they're all connected?
They're all connected.
Cool.
Yeah, so I have this wall is shared with the people next door, and then the far wall on the other, like not in my room, but in the hallway, is the other people next door.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, serve.
Yeah, he has two kids.
So, like, could be gay, but also could not be
Pretty
gay.
sure he's not.
Wait, but Knock at the Cabin Door is two dads.
Correct.
Is the book version two dads also?
Correct.
So maybe he's gay. Nonetheless, it's a gay book.
It is a gay book.
And
That's
so at
true.
Least we have that.
Okay, what if I just look up Paul Tremblay wife?
Good idea.
He does have a wife. Her name's Lisa. Hi, Lisa.
Bummer. Lisa, I'm sure you're a wonderful woman, but we really wanted your husband to be gay.
Yeah, we were hoping.
We were hoping he was a homosexual. Here we are. This episode's
back again.
Because not only is it Summerween, I feel like it's two books we've been curious about for a long time. And it's also our second time attempting these authors.
Yes.
Me less so, because I only had read a Nick Cutter short story, which I actually did like. And then what you read Pallbearers Club?
Yeah.
And you didn't like it?
No. I like, here's the tea about Paul Bearer's Club. I like the idea. It was a different take on vampires. It wasn't horror. Like, it was way too realistic. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It was very much like a terrible friend situation.
Yeah.
One that I have experienced before. But so it was like that, and I just think that it like didn't do what he needed it to do and fell flat. That's the tea on that.
And what did you think about this one?
I liked it a lot more.
Oh, good. Okay. One success. Because,
yes,
a spoiler alert, I think I hated mine.
Good to know. Good to know.
I read the entire thing, and there's parts of it that I'm sure you could say were good, but I think I hated it.
It happens sometimes. It does.
It happens.
And
But it's
maybe,
kind of fun. When
maybe that one just wasn't the one for you.
I know. It's like, I'm like, okay, do I give him a third try and read The Deep, or do we just cancel Nick Cutter?
The Deep might be good.
I know. We'll reassess after I tell you about the troop.
Okay.
I went first last time, I believe. Would you like to go first this time?
I would love to. Let me pull up my scale. Okay. So, Cabin at the End of the World, made into a movie called Knock at the Cabin Door. And they also did, like, different movie covers for the books, also called Knock at the Cabin Door, which I hated. Don't do that. Just keep it what it is. People can figure it out, but whatever. Whatever. So, pretty much, two dads and their daughter are vacationing in a cabin. And the daughter's outside, and someone walks up to her and is like, "Hey, let's talk." And he's a stranger, and he like apologizes to her for things that are about to happen, and she gets freaked out and runs inside. And these people come in, and they're like, so they start knocking at the door, and there's like four of them, and they're like, "We really need to talk to you about the end of the world." And they pretty much tell these, this family that they that the world is ending, and they got visions about it that told them to come to this cabin, and they need to sacrifice one of their own family to stop the end of the world. So right off the bat, Liza, it's you, your spouse, and the child that you have. And these people come and they say, "It is the end of the world. You have to sacrifice one of your own." What are you doing?
Kill myself, of course. Easy.
So you would believe them.
Well, oh no, I don't believe them at all. That's the first thing is to say, get away from my house. I don't know you people. You're crazy and you're probably in a cult. Only if it turned out to be true do I kill myself.
So they like turn on the news at various points, and they're like, the earth will flood and the sky will fall like glass and blah 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 blah. And then they turn on the news at various points, and it's like a tsunami happened at this part of the world. And the one dad is like, "Okay, cool, a tsunami happened, but did you realize that that wasn't live footage? Like, you guys probably, like, that tsunami happened hours ago. You guys knew that that was going to happen." And they were like, "No, we didn't." At what point do you trust? You know what I mean? So, Paul does, like, the concept is really good and really interesting. And I mean, like, the movie was really cool. It definitely had, I will say, like, if you watched the movie and not, and didn't read the book, and you're like, "Oh, well, I watched the movie, so I don't need to read the book." There is a huge plot difference, that they did in the movie that is quite interesting. Like, I don't know what, I don't know whose call it was to change the thing, but it was a very interesting change, I will say. So readability and interest, I gave it a 7. It's very, it's, I don't want to say it's like very short, but it's quite short. And I think that it's a good balance of like, okay, here we are in the cabin and this crazy stuff is happening and we're afraid. And it's also like, oh, here's a flashback to like when the daughter was adopted. And here's a flashback to something that happened to one of the dads at a bar. And here's a flashback to the dad's parents coming over. Like, there's a lot of different, there's a good balance of like this moment of fear and not knowing what's going on. Like, okay, let's center ourselves in the past for a minute and give, I guess, like the reader a nice break. Which I thought was really smart. Otherwise, I feel like the book would have been a lot shorter and also more intense. And I feel like doing those little breaks into life. I don't want to like shit on like small splatterpunk authors, you know, but also like doing something like that, breaking the story up, is something that elevates it to more literary. So yeah, readability and interest 7, language and style, I gave it an 8. I also really enjoyed the writing from Gwen's perspective, who's the daughter. There was something very childlike about it, and also like again, like she does this thing where she like tucks her thumb into her fist and like puts it by her cheek. And like that was something that was constantly referenced. She like collects grasshoppers and like looks at them, and there's a part where she realizes she left them in the jar, and that like child panic was so good. And I don't think that it's easy to write from a child's perspective and have them still seem like intelligent beings. I feel like a lot of authors miss the mark on that. And I think that Paul did a really, really great job for this one. And I'll also say the way that he keeps the reader kind of guessing, like we also don't know who to believe and what's true or whatever. That's really interesting. And I feel like it's something that happens better in the book than it does in the movie. In the movie, I like know who I believe and what I think is right or whatever. But like in the book, you really don't have any idea. And I think that really adds to the horror of it. For shelf worthy read again, I think this is an 8. I think this is like a modern classic. I heard that Head Full of Ghosts and maybe Survivor Song are Paul's two best books, but I mean, like, I feel like this is a great contender. And it's definitely like, it reminds me of I'm Thinking of Ending Things in that way that you're in reader confusion. There should be like a subsection of horror that's like psychological reader confusion books, and those two are definitely in it. Yeah, I definitely think it's something to add to the collection. I would probably read it again also, just because there's probably things that I didn't pick up on. But it is hard to like, when you get into a book and you're like living in that fear with the characters, it's hard to do that again and again and again. But sometimes we like it. For plot, I gave it a 9. I thought this is really like, so for such a simple concept of like, this happened, do we kill our own? Do we trust these people? Even if we have like, even if they're showing us things and they clearly believe it, do we believe them? For a concept as simple and as like age-old question as that one, it is, the plot's really interesting. And of course, like, there's the angle of like, is this just a hate crime? Like, I think all of it makes for a really good original plot that's well written, well thought out, and honestly that is working really well for him. So I gave it a 9. For characterization, I gave it an 8. I loved Gwen. She was amazing. I like that you get a little bit of the personalities from each of these four people who are breaking into the cabin. There's a part where they're all like, my name is this. This is what my job is. I do this. I got these visions. Like, they just start like telling you about their life. And I love to see like how these people who are like everyday and ordinary, how they got into this situation. Whether we believe them or not, it's just interesting to be like, how did you end up at the cabin? And how is your personality working with all these other personalities? Oops. My bad. The reason why I gave it an 8 instead of maybe higher is because sometimes I was confused on the dad's personalities. And I just think that this is a me thing. I don't really think that this was like poor writing or anything. I just think that, like, you know, I think that I was confusing the movie personalities with the book personalities a little bit, and it was throwing me off. I don't really know how to say this. It's like, I think I just kept confusing the traits of each dad. And then he would be talking about one. I'm like, oh, clearly he's talking about Eric. And then it turned out he was talking about Andrew. And that was confusing to me. But I think that that was just like a me thing that I was getting confused with who they were based on the movie. But yeah, that would really be my only thing that made me bump it down. But yeah, I liked this book. I feel like Paul Tremblay always does something a little bit weird, like how like Ruth Ware always has like a big plot twist he would have never seen coming. I feel like Paul Tremblay has his own version of like a horror plot twist where you're like, oh, this is what this book is. And while I don't think that it worked very well in Paul Bearer's Club for him, I think that it works pretty good in this book. And I think you guys should pick it up. And I also think that Paul Tremblay should listen to this episode and then come visit my store. That would be kind of nice, Paul. But yeah, that's all she wrote.
Shout out to Paul.
Shout out, Paul.
We love him.
We do
It
love
turned
him.
out.
Just this once.
Just this once. I might read the book now that you said it. Because, like, while you first were talking about it, I was like, oh, I'm definitely going to watch the movie. But then the last half of you talked about it, I was like, maybe I should actually read the book first.
I think you should
It's
read the book
cool.
first. I
Yeah.
also think they did something in the movies where because they picked a couple big name actors, it changed the characters a little bit. For example, one of the guys who breaks in, his name is Leonard. And in the movie, he's played by who's that huge
Dave
guy?
Bautista?
Yes, he's played by
Yes.
him. Whereas in the book, he's written as like huge, but a very like gentle, like 24-year-old.
Interesting.
And I feel like him being so young actually does change who the character is and how you feel about him, because it does make it more like, is this a cult? Like, is this poor 24-year-old just like in on this cult?
Right.
So,
That big difference.
yes. So maybe you should read the book and then watch the movie.
Okay, I'll do that. I'll do it. It actually sounds good enough to read. And something I'd like to say is when you first started talking about it, I guess I didn't realize it was an apocalypse, potentially apocalypse movie slash book. So I was like, okay, this is giving cabin in the woods, which I love, and also that new one that they turned into a movie recently is it called This Is Where It Ends? This is where, hold on, let me look it up. And obviously, like, okay, so cabin, spoiler alert, Cabin in the Woods ends up being an apocalypse movie, even though it doesn't feel like it's supposed to be an apocalypse movie. And then Leave the World Behind is what the other one I was thinking of, and that's where they like go to like an Airbnb and it's the end of the world, and this other couple show this father and daughter show up, and it's like trying to figure out who to trust and who not to trust and what's going on. The thing is that Paul Tremblay's is still so different and interesting. Like, you'd think it would be, especially looking at Cabin in the Woods, you'd think it's like, you're like, it's weird that it happened twice, that there was like a cabin and an apocalypse horror. But at the same time, they sound so different that I'm like, apples to oranges. It's just kind of interesting. They're both two classic horror concepts, a cabin and an apocalypse put together. That said, I feel like that's a good segue to The Troop, because I feel like Paul Tremblay slayed in using something that actually, in making something that kind of had been done before totally new. And Nick Cutter did not do very that, because this book is a complete ripoff of the movie Cabin Fever from the 90s, which is a great movie. Really gross movie, but great movie. And he somehow was using elements that would have made it better. For example, the fact that it's a Boy Scouts troop on an island instead of a bunch of like 20 somethings in a cabin in like Appalachia. But some elements that made it just so much worse that I'm like, literally just go watch Cabin Fever and hopefully somebody else ends up writing a book about Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts in a horror that's better than whatever this bullshit is. Because this book suffered from what I like to call the Ryan Murphy effect, in that he tried to put too many things into a book that could have been so simple. So the book is summer camp, island, deserted island, serial killer, virus, bugs, kind of zombie, all in one. And I'm like, Nick, you had one job and I fear that you failed. I'll jump right into the rating scale. It's not good. For readability, I gave this book a 3. It's not actually that long, but it's a pain in the ass to get through. It felt like the longest book I've read in a while, and it turns out it was only like 300 something page. It's like very typical length of a horror, so bear that in mind. And I think that partially has to do with the too much going on detail. I think I would have actually preferred if he had picked one or two things, like a contagion on an island, or bugs and Boy Scouts, serial killer and Boy Scout, like, you know what I mean? Like, I actually think that would have made it more readable, even though it would have less details, because the actual, I think, multiple details is what really bogged it down. Language and style is where it gets interesting, because I want to give it something, because this book was so gross. It was disgusting. It was some of the most visceral horror I've ever read. And therefore, I feel like he should get points for that. But I also don't really care, because we've already mentioned Splatterpunk in this episode. And Marissa was like, not to, you know, diss Splatterpunk authors, but also like to diss Splatterpunk authors. Like, there's a time and a place for really grotesque writing, and it needs to be doing something important for me to want to give you your flowers for it. And I feel like there was a time or two in The Troop where you were like, okay, this is gross. This is really cool. I see what he's doing. But most of the time you were just like, shut up, Nick. Like, I don't. And I will say one thing. I wanted us to do an episode that was phobias, so each of us would read a book about our, like, biggest fear, or, like, featuring one of our phobias. And if you are afraid of bugs that or like anything creepy crawly, this book falls into that category. And so I kind of had to respect it for that because like parts of it really did freak me out. But I don't know. I personally felt like it was a little bit too much. A little bit. It's rare for me to say something is too gross. It really, because I like to be really scared when I'm reading. I love when I'm reading a book and I'm like, oh, that really fucking scared me. That freaked me out. I think this was just a little bit too gratuitous for me to be like applauding him. For form, again, there's parts of it that you kind of want to be like, okay, I see what you were doing there. That was kind of cool. And kind of give him, a thumbs up for, but at the same time, it wasn't working well. So he was interlacing all these different mediums in that it would be like perspective of what it was like for the boys on the island versus like police reports and scientific reports and radio reports and like all this kind of like almost more like I guess you want to call it like analytical information about what was going on, and then you get the emotional aspect of it from the boys on the island themselves. So like that's kind of a cool way to paint a contagion-centered book, I think, because I think that is, I mean, we've all experienced it firsthand now with COVID. Like that is how you're kind of experiencing the world when there is a some sort of outbreak. And a lot of the interesting plot twists were actually revealed in the sort of legal documents and like outside information rather than what was happening to the boys on the island, which was kind of interesting too. Add that as actually as another layer to the too much going on. There's like a biological warfare terrorism thing going on too. Pick a struggle, Nick. So I gave it a 5.5. Like I said, I don't know if it was working that well, but it was technically interesting and new. So I had to kind of give him that. For shelf worthiness, it's so subjective. I actually feel like there's a large camp of readers who would love this book. And listen, that's your life. I'm not gonna yuck your yum. So I feel like I'm kind of biased at this point. I feel like more often than not, Marissa and I are pretty good at figuring out whether something's worth reading or not. But to be quite honest with you, when it comes to this sort of splatterpunk horror, which is neither of our real cups of tea, where we are into a sort of different kind of horror than that, I feel like it's a little bit more difficult for us to be like, you can skip this or you should read it because I'm sitting here like, I hate it, but I know for a fact there's bitches out there who would love this. And let the misandrist in me come forward. This is a book for boys who like horror. And I don't often agree with boys who like horror. In fact, I like to fight them quite frequently. This is Marissa and I's agenda, I feel like, is sort of queering horror and looking at women's take on horror and people of color's take on horror and literary horror and horror that's doing something interesting and new. And Nick Cutter is just giving very classic white cis straight man horror. And that's a genre that is a bestseller, but it's not a genre that I'm gonna give any more than a one on in terms of shelf worthiness and readability and read again. For plot, I feel like I've already touched on this. It's got too much going on. So I gave the book a 4, not even for slight confusion or predictability, because never was I that confused and never was I knowing what was going to happen next. But yeah, it was just too much. It had the bones actually to be quite cool. But like I said, if you kind of want just like a simple version of this, just go watch Cabin Fever. Like it's a good movie, but it's a shitty movie. It's kind of like House of Wax style, where you're like, this was an era in the 90s where something very crazy was happening in horror film, and I love it. And that movie is really gross. So if you're looking for that kind of thing, just watch that. Just do that instead. And for characterization, again, I feel like if you're a young white cishet man, you probably relate to these characters. I don't, and I don't like them. Which is interesting because I actually really did like the short story I read of Nick Cutter's, which was also Contagion-esque. It was like about like a toxic algae bloom. And I liked the characters enough, in that story. There was a bit, and I, okay. Again, if we're rating it on how realistic it is, I guess you would could give it like a 5 or a 6, because the other thing I hated about this book, which we've talked about time and time again, often with Stephen King, there's too many weird sexual comments and erection imagery and talking about penises that I'm like, shut up. Like, I'm like, I don't, this is not adding anything to the plot. I don't really understand why it's even relevant at all here. And it's like, it's oddly, I guess it's supposed to be polarizing because you're either gonna I can't even fully wrap my head around it. But at the same time, they're teenage boys and they're Boy Scouts. Like, I guess that's something that is gonna be on their minds slash they're thinking about. But I don't frankly care, and I don't really want to read about teenage boys' erections as a 25-year-old adult woman who doesn't even care for men's perspectives to begin with. So that's my thoughts on that. That's my thoughts. There wasn't any characters that I particularly liked. I feel like if anything, spoiler alert, the characters that you're sympathetic for get absolutely murdered. And the characters that you hate are the ones who are prevailing in the end. So do with that what you will. But yeah, that's The Troop by Nick Cutter.
How long were they trapped on this island for?
I don't even think that long.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you because I was fading in and out by the end, but only I think a few days because the main character would be like, our parents have to be know by now that we're not back from camp. Like they have to be looking for us. Like, and that's when you find out about this kind of biological warfare aspect of it. It's like they know they're there, but they can't get them, and you know, what have you. But I don't think it's long.
So some teenage boys trapped on an island for a couple of days. No gay shit happens.
Nothing very gay. Only gay in the way that all teenage boys are homoerotic, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Right? Like it exactly. And that's why a teenage boy slash a 20-year-old guy would probably read this book and be like, this is so relatable. I love it. And I'd be like, you need to seek psychological evaluation.
Yeah, I like really wonder if there are any men listening to the podcast. I
Yeah.
know you guys probably haven't been in an island zombie virus bug situation, but if you have, were you horny and were you aware of it?
Okay, and that's
Like,
the
is
open
this real?
question.
Are
Is
you guys
this
really
real?
like that?
Because that would never happen if it were girls.
I know. And I just feel like there has to, like, so many men write scary things and have, like, a man being aware of, like, his penis or a woman's breast or, like, something sexual. Then I'm like, why is this a common thing? Is, like, where's the reality? Like, I get that it's horror, I get that it's a fiction book, but where's the reality in that? Is
Yeah.
there something about violence that makes you horny? Can we discuss that?
And yeah, and exactly. Like, I mean, like, Stephen King's the perfect example. Like, shit gets weird in The Shining, and you have to sit back and be like, okay, that's kind of not great that that was the thought process that was happening while all of this horror was unfolding. Like, I will never be able to understand.
Which again, the book's quite different. The book is
That's true.
quite different. But I've read, I mean, let's think about it.
Let's think about it. Right.
Maybe we shouldn't think about it. Let's think about The Stand. Like, that's an apocalypse.
Sure.
And I'm sure, like, people are gonna be screwing if there's an apocalypse and whatever else, but, like, there are certain points that I'm like, there's a disease going around. How are you touching each other?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there has to be some. I just need to know, like, where's the reality in that? Men, we want to hear you. Please
Go
let
in
us know.
the comment
Please let us know. What is this real? Like, are you guys really thinking like this? I'd love to know.
My gut tells me yes, unfortunately.
But why? Like,
And
what
that,
is that
yeah.
psychologically? Is it fear? Are you guys so afraid that you have to revert to some kind of comfort and that's where you go to? Is it that, like, the violence or the excitement of being afraid is making you horny? Like, what is less, I don't know. Can someone try to explain this to me?
Let's examine it. Let's seek professional help after we examine it.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, I don't even fucking know.
I don't really
That's
know.
it. That's all she wrote. That's all she said.
Yeah.
Well, happy Summerween.
Happy Summerween. It feels wrong to
Let
say Summerween after we just talked about
I
that.
exactly and exactly, bestie. What is next week?
Next week, we are doing sequels.
What are you gonna read?
I'm going to be reading Clown in a Cornfield 2, and I'm already like 100 pages in, and I love it.
Yay! That's so exciting. I'm excited. I'm currently reading The Scorch Trials. And I like it. I like it. So far, I think I like the first one better.
Wait.
But I exactly. And it's so scary.
And they're completely different.
Yeah. Also, talk about Contagion done well. Like,
Amazingly well and
I was
terribly in the
here.
movies.
Really.
Yeah.
Classic. Shout out to James, even though he's potentially a problem,
Yeah.
or confirmed a problem, actually, I fear.
Warp, warp.
Which I have some interesting feminist comments for next week too.
Can't
So we'll
wait.
have to circle back on that. But that's it.
Sick.
We'll see you.
Bye.
Recording in progress.